We'll turn now to Jan Hocken and Mike Snedeker for The Left in the Law, discussing the recent Supreme Court confirmation of Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson and the reactionary history and current direction of SCOTUS.
On April 7th, Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson was confirmed by the Senate to become the 116th Supreme Court Justice and the first Black woman to serve on the court. This has been an important historical milestone made more poignant by the grace and agility Judge Jackson displayed in walking the hot coals set for her by the rabid Republicans. Mike, let's start by talking about the significance of this landmark appointment, perhaps particularly for progressives. Not only the appointment of the first Black woman, but the only judge since Justice Thurgood Marshall to have served as a public defender.
Well, she's had real experience defending people, like, for example, in Guantanamo Bay. She comes from a well-placed Black family in Atlanta and has had a variety of experiences as a clerk and then as a judge. And she hasn't done any death penalty work or had any much of a career yet as a judge, but we know that she's relatively friendly to labor unions, that her opinions are pretty good. And overall, considering even the small pool that Biden had limited him to, I think she's an excellent choice.
You know, watching some of the confirmation hearings remind me of so many of the feelings we had about Barack Obama, that for a Black person to ascend to the heights of power, they have to be like a perfect human being. The attacks against her were pretty low, and they were not able to really go after her in terms of her academic achievements, her personal history. But there was a lot of right-wing theatrics that were part of these confirmation hearings. And I wanted to just talk a little about that, since, of course, many of these hearings are meant to be replayed in various social media platforms in anticipation of the midterms, with Republicans wanting to outperform each other, seen as hurling insults at Judge Jackson. There was, of course, the predictable bombastic claims around critical race theory, which I think of as critical race theory for dummies, and the LGBTQ so-called political agenda in grooming children. But many of these fire-breathing senators were particularly fixated on child pornography cases. Do you want to comment on that, both how she answered the accusations of people like Ted Cruz, Lindsey Graham, and also why the heavy currency that child sexual abuse and child pornography carries in conservative politics?
Well, you said the right word. It's theatrics. It was all theater and designed in many ways to cover up what was actually happening in the U.S. Supreme Court behind the scenes. Now, the use of child pornography and the accusation of her being, and those Republican senators who voted for her as being pro-pedophile, is ludicrous, but it's ironic. That's the crime du jour. Anything related to sex, and particularly with children, is the very hot button right now. But her uncle was sentenced to life in prison for a nonviolent cocaine incident a couple of decades ago, back in the days when drugs were the crime du jour and sex crimes passed largely unnoticed. She had direct family experience, even though other members of her family were heads of school districts and were occupying managerial positions. Some members of her family ran squarely against bad laws that sentenced people essentially to death for what we now regard as trivial matters. What was really happening this week in the Supreme Court, behind all the theatrics and the attention focused on Justice Brown, was a decision by the, quote, shadow docket, which essentially gutted the Clean Water Act. There was a decision made that, without any reasoning whatsoever, where the Supreme Court essentially allowed a lawsuit filed by people like Exxon to hold sway over the state of Louisiana's efforts to block pipelines and to do what it has been able to do since 1972 in the passage of the Clean Water Act, namely participate in the decisions made about corporate investments that could have serious effects on the water supply. And it's
that was suspended under the Trump administration.
That's right. And then a decision from a district court struck down this Trump's suspension because it was blatantly against the terms of the law. Before this could be decided by the Court of Appeal, the U.S. Supreme Court issued a decision staying the opinion, or rather freezing the case right where it is now, with the Trump amendments in effect, without any comment or any reasoning or any, which is doubly ironic because of what Justice Barrett said about how against those who claim that the court is really political these days. He said, well, you might think the result is political, but then read what we say about it. Look at our reasoning and see whether or not you find that to be flawed. Well, now there's nothing to look at. They simply said Exxon can continue doing what it's doing, period.
Yeah, Earth Justice described this decision as a blatant gift to the oil and gas industry. And Justice Elena Kagan, in her dissent, argued that this emergency ruling was a fake emergency under the shadow docket. Can you explain that idea of the shadow docket and these emergency rulings that the Supreme Court can make that clearly are part of their own shadowy side or shadow work?
Well, they're allowed to jump in and stop proceedings if there's some sort of immediate emergency pending. But here, Exxon did not even point to any single instance of a problem.
How this rule would harm them, you mean, as a business?
Yeah, yeah. So they've taken something that was designed for rare cases of immediate dramatic effect and applied it without a single real serious problem or any justification whatsoever, either expressed or even expressed by the people who asked for the stay.
Do you think the laziness of their argument is a reflection of how confident these conservatives in industry are in having their way with the court?
Well, yeah, we've got like a hypermajority of a super conservative group or a supermajority of a hyper conservative group of justices that gets whatever they want. So there will be no immediate effect of the Ketanji Brown Jackson appointment. We will have abortion rights effectively ended as a national fundamental constitutional right under the idea that these matters should be left to the states. And that may itself be, in the minds of some of the justices, a halfway step toward banning abortion altogether. New York passed a gun control law limiting the right to display weapons. That law is very likely to be struck down. The EPA has had serious limits placed on its ability to do anything at all. Voting rights. The climax of Dr. Martin Luther King's work was the Voting Rights Act of 1965. Which had profound effects in many parts of the country. It's been systematically taken on and gutted by, here Justice Roberts has been leading the way, saying in essence, well, those were old problems. Now we don't have any voting rights problems anymore.
Part Similarly right. with affirmative action.
That's
Senator
right.
Dale Connor said, well, we need this, but in 25 years, we won't need it anymore. Clearly
right.
we still do need it. But that's also on the chopping block.
Well, it's part of the whole idea that racism is something in our past. It's something that we shouldn't really study at all because it never was that big of a deal. And now it's gone anyway. And not only does that fire up the attacks on critical race theory, which is essentially a way of highlighting that racism has been a very real and dominant theme in this country since its founding. But in terms of voting rights, this court will strike down just about anything that would protect the right to vote or encourage the right to vote. You know, it's been pretty clear now, and the justices thought they had settled the whole question of whether affirmative action could be used for college admissions. Basically, you could not admit somebody strictly on the basis of race, but you were allowed to use race as a factor to create a diverse class. Well, that is likely to go away with this present conservative majority.
So getting back to Justice Jackson, Judge Jackson, who will by fall be Justice Jackson, is her appointment to the court something to celebrate because it's a symbolic marker of the strength of Black people politically and historically and the claims on this country, and particularly claims on the Democratic Party, but it will yield very little other than perhaps well-written dissent opinions along with the other liberals?
Well, she will have essentially no effect now. But life is long. She's young. She's in her early 50s. And she will write, I think, articulate dissents. And articulate dissents have a way of becoming a majority opinions down the road. In a decade or two decades, she could become a real towering presence. That's a very real possibility. But for now, not, with the religious freedom being the ticket to Supreme Court decisions, if you can manage to hook up any issue, including same-sex marriages or whatever, to your religious liberty, you are likely to get a hearing.
One of those cases will be before the court this season as well.
Absolutely. So all of the matters I've discussed, she's not going to be decisive because there is a 6-vote hyper-conservative majority, primarily of Catholics, that are going to rule for the foreseeable future.
So in closing, we want to honor and recognize the achievement in this appointment, but also it's a sobering reminder of that the prospects for justice from this highest court in the land are pretty dismal right now. Of the circulating proposed reforms, are there any you think we in the left should be supporting, or should we just withdraw ourselves from any hopes for the Supreme Court at all and fight to expose its fraudulent claims of political neutrality?
We should strongly do that and hope to discredit the court. It's a very anti-democratic institution in the first place. The committee appointed by Biden had 34 people on it, and it comes out with no recommendations, simply a listing of arguments for and against expanding the court or changing its role. It's totally ineffective. I don't see any significant movement that is supported by people with any power to limit the court in any way. So I think we've got to do, as you said, discredit this court, show that it's pretensions of being non-political are laughable. We need to laugh at them and point out how political the court truly is, while meanwhile working with the legislative and the executive branches of government, like, for example, working with great prosecutors, supporting them when they get elected, or working locally and work with the other branches of government in order to limit the reach of this group of 6 people on the U.S. Supreme Court.
Okay, well, Mike, I'm sure we'll continue to follow the court and we'll do our best to strip them of their regal robes symbolically or discursively. This is Jan Hawk and Mike Snedeker talking today about the confirmation of Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson to the Supreme Court.